This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. There, I did it. Okay, so it's not the Moonlight Sonata, but what if I told you that I just played Hot Cross Buns on a tangerine piano? Yes. Each of those notes came from me touching my finger to a tangerine. I've got three of them here wired up to my laptop with some alligator clips and a circuit board. It's all part of an invention kit called the Makey Makey. And if you want to see one for yourself, you can, you can. Last month, the Makey Makey became part of the official design collection at the Museum of Modern Art here in New York, where it's going to be on view next year. So how does a circuit board make it into MoMA? My first question for MoMA's senior design curator, Paola Antonelli. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you, Ira. Good to see you.
So
you're quite the musician.
You've been acquiring a lot of cool tech lately, from maker kits to computer interfaces. You even acquired the at symbol. We're going to talk more about that a little bit later, but let's talk about the maker kits. You've got five of them, including the Makey Makey. Why do you focus on the maker stuff?
Well, there's maker kits, and then there's also boards that are more already developed. But also there's a lot of utilitarian objects and parts of objects in the collection of MoMA. You might see them as being acquired now, but we also have ball bearings from 1934. So that's the same thing. The Arduino of today is the ball bearing of yesteryear.
Is it because that is the trend of what's going on in the art world? Or why is a technology device, even like a teapot or something, included in the collection?
Yeah, no, not at all. It's not a trend. You know, technology is always there. And after a few years, we call it old technology, and the new one we called advanced, but it's part of every object that we deal with. And technology objects are objects. So we look at them with the same eye that we use when we look at a chair. You know, it's about function, it's about elegance, it's about economy, it's about invention.
Right, because I would rather guess that a geek, I'm holding one of these Arduino boards that you've also got on exhibit there, that when a geeky person looks at this board, he or she gets as much pleasure and aha moment out of somebody looking at maybe one of the Picassos on exhibit.
I completely agree. I'm with you. I mean, when I look at the Arduino, tears stream down my cheeks. No,
tell
it's
us
true.
A little bit more about this board.
The Arduino board, you know, was designed quite a few years ago by an international team. You know, there's also a New Yorker, Tom Igo, that teaches at NYU. And it's an amazing, important object because it's become the controller and the microprocessor for so much physical computing and for so many other objects. You know, mm-hmm. So it's almost like the core of invention right now.
Mm-hmm. You've also added the color chaser. We're going to listen to what the color chaser sounds like. Tell us what we're listening to here.
You're listening to a little train that's running over tracks, black tracks that we drew, and encountering little dabs of color. And as it runs over the colors, it plays a different note every single time. And it's the work of Yuri Suzuki. Yuri Suzuki is a wonderful musician and like sound and instruments designer that's based in London. But in the past, he used to work and live in Japan, and he worked for a duo that you might know about. The name was Maiwa Denki. Hmm. They were like musicians, but absurdist musicians. They were like two-man orchestras, and they were inventing new instruments. So mm-hmm. That's what he does now.
Now, a few years ago, you started acquiring video games. Why video games?
The Museum of Modern Art is concerned with the art of our time, and you can put that between quotes because it was the original founding director that spoke about it. So the art of our time is concerned with also the technology of our time, and in particular, video games and interaction design have become such an important part of our life. Mm-hmm. We cannot possibly not consider it amongst design and also amongst art. And so we do. The curators in all departments look at interaction, and I, as a design curator, look at video games that way.
And so interaction design is design that allows us to interact with
interaction design. Yes, it's about every interaction that we have with the machines that count on digital technology. So every time we encounter a screen, sometimes we encounter it and we're mad at it, say the ATM machine, or an object that I love, which is the MetroCard machine. The interface is so beautiful. That's an interaction design object.
Is it, we can have a MetroCard machine in the museum?
It already was. We had an exhibition in 2011 that was called Talk to Me, and it was about the communication between people and objects, and we had a MetroCard selling specially designed MetroCard that had a back with the symbol of the show.
That's terrific. When you collect a video game, what are you collecting? Are you collecting the console, the code, the interface, all of it?
The holy grail is the code. It's very hard to get the code because the code is like the formula for Coca-Cola. Nobody wants to give it to you. And it's really because it's the proprietary secret of the company. So sometimes you get it from designers. It's harder to get it from companies. And when we cannot acquire the code, we acquire simulation, emulations, the cartridge, the hardware. Mm. But what we are interested in showing is the interaction by itself.
Because mm-hmm. you have an exhibit now at MoMA where you can actually play those old video games.
Definitely. And I'm particularly proud of the fact that you can play Pong and you can play, you know, you can play Tetris, the original simulation of the original Tetris. It's the original designer, Alexey Pajitnov, that simulated it for us today.
And you know, you also have Pac-Man. Why Pac-Man?
Pac-Man.
Something everybody knows?
Or? Oh, yeah. No. Pac-Man is amazing, not only because it's part of everybody's life. It's not only the popularity. It's also that, if you think about it, it's a two-dimensional maze. You look at this maze, but it's never two-dimensional to the player. It always feels like three, four, five dimensions. You really feel that you are in a space and you're running for your life because the ghosts want to eat you. It really is so evocative. And it shows how today we don't live anymore just in the two or three dimensions. We live in more dimensions, and hopefully there will be even more added in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Now, I went with you at the museum at MoMA watching
yeah, that was
you
fun.
Play those games.
We played them together. We did Street Fighter 2 together.
Yes, you wiped me out of Street Fighter. Yeah. I was on my back at Street Fighter. And it was ugly on my side. Is Street Fighter your favorite game there, or what is your favorite
game? No, my favorite game, I shouldn't have a favorite. It's not fair, but it is Tempest. And Tempest is a game, an old game, you know, from the 80s. And it's on the Atari console. And what was wonderful about it was that it was so rudimentary in technology because it was only vector graphics, but it was so, oh my, it's so deep and so incredibly sophisticated spatially.
Mm-hmm. And what is it that you're looking for when you decide? Because there are a whole lot of games out there. Mm-hmm. How do you decide which ones you can put in and which ones is? It must be a difficult decision.
It is and it isn't. We thought about it for a long time. We gathered a group of experts and advisors because that's how we do it. And we tried to set up some criteria. It's an art museum, so form is important, an aesthetic intention as a form of communication. Then since games are dynamic, we have to think of space and time, you know, the way they move into space. But the most interesting aspect, which is what makes interaction design what it is behavior. Interaction designers design a behavior and how people interact with the machine. So Street Fighter 2 and the way you play it is a form of interaction design. You're aggressive in a certain way. You're attentive in another way with Tetris. Behavior is the key.
Mm-hmm. But some of these newer games that are out are very violent games. Do you take that into account, whether you're going to put it in your collection or not?
Violence is multifaceted. For instance, I just tweeted a few days ago a new game called This War of Mine, in which you play a war not as a soldier or as an attacker, but as a civilian fighting for survival. Mm. So it's really beautiful. See, it's violence, but it's a different kind of violence. So I feel that gratuitous violence that is inflicted upon weaker beings, whether they are asteroids or, you know, human beings, is what we do not want to represent because we're talking about behavioral design. But if it's a type of violence that is about exerting force for survival or for martial arts education, then it's different.
Mm-hmm. How has the digital revolution changed what it means to be a designer?
It has changed what it means to be a human being. And designers sometimes, I feel, are human beings par excellence. You know, so it has given us connectivity, of course. It has given us access and the ability to understand how other people live in different parts of the world. So I would say that designers right now have a much wider fan of possibilities in terms of different cultural elements they can use. And also they have many more fields because they also have the digital fields, not only the physical ones.
Were you a geek before you were a curator?
I always was a geek. Well, it's almost like a cliche to say it, but I wanted to be an astronaut when I was a child. And then I went through astronomy, nuclear physics, and economy. And then I went to architecture. So complete super geek, yes.
And so you wound up at MoMA in an art museum and doing what you loved in a sort of a circuitous way, bringing in...
And never choosing it. I always feel like I was a surfer. Yeah, just catching the wave.
See, out at Jones Beach. And let's talk about the at symbol, the iconic at symbol that everybody's using now. But how do you acquire that? You said you were acquiring it for the museum. Isn't it open to public domain?
Absolutely. And that's one of my proudest moments. And actually, I realized that I shouldn't say acquisition. I should say anointment. Because as you pointed out, it belongs to everybody. It's in the public domain. Mm-hmm. So we did not take it out of circulation. And it's very funny when people call us and they ask for an image like they do for other objects, we always tell them, it's on your keyboard. Just push the button. And they are perplexed. And then we tell them, we recommend you use as a font American typewriter because that's the closest font in appearance to the teletype that was used in 1971 by Ray Tomlinson to invent the email program. So we give a little bit of depth as we say it's yours like everybody else. It's the share economy coming into a museum.
When you anoint it, what is there a ceremony or something? Or what do you do to anoint the ad sign?
Well, maybe the one ceremony that happened was the acquisitions committee meeting in which I talked about it. But it was long in the making because for everything you acquire into MoMA, you have to convince first your immediate colleagues, then a wider pool of colleagues, and then the acquisitions committee. So it took a while to make the case. And the case is very strong. Actually, we really worked on it hard. But then once it was done, it was, boom, silk screen on the wall.
Wow. You've said that design is sort of imitating physics. There'll be theorists and there'll be experimentalists. Tell us what you mean. Is that a good thing?
I think it's a wonderful thing. You know, designers are the repository of a sense of humanity in pretty much any kind of situation. So I think that they are philosophers in some cases, and they're not always solving problems. Some are. Others are creating or framing problems for the future. So they have a very philosophical approach. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that in the future, some designers will become part, will sit at the table with mayors, with government officers, and will help people draw policies. So they will become like French philosophers. You know how in France they call up a philosopher when they want to change the price of milk? That's what I'm hoping will happen also for designers. So some will be very hands-on, you know, the experimental physics, and some others will be the theorists and some theoreticians, and sometimes they'll talk to each other, but mostly they'll fight like physicists do.
Hey, absolutely. In case you joined us, I'm talking with MoMA senior designer, design curator Paola Antonelli, and this is Science Friday from PRI. Public Radio International. Talking a bit more about the new designers coming out today, are they coming from a art background or are they coming from a geeky background?
They come from all sorts of backgrounds. There are so many artists that are super geeks, by the way, without ever having done any kind of official geek studies. So some of them are coders, are programmers. You know, coding is very important. And some others instead are old-fashioned painters that decide to try new technologies. Mm. So I would say that, like in the past, artists have the freedom to choose, which is what differentiates them from designers mostly, have the freedom to choose what to do and for whom. And they can jump fences very easily. But today also designers can jump fences, which is very exciting.
See if I can get a quick phone call in. Let's go to Buffalo, New York, my old stomping grounds. Lawrence, hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hello. Thank you for taking my phone call today.
Now go ahead.
Very interesting topic. I just have a quick question from Ms. Antonelli about just is the idea of inserting, say, video games and technology into MoMA, is that just not an extension of Duchampian's idea, Duchamp's idea of the ready-made object, going back to what you could call the famous urinal that he submitted under the pseudonym R. Mutt?
That's a very good question. It's not an extension at all, but it is connected. And that's the beauty of a place like the Museum of Modern Art that has so many different disciplines that are under one roof. So Duchamp's proposals and ideas came after the beginning of the collection. You know, MoMA was founded in 1929, and it was founded on this Bauhaus idea. The Bauhaus was a German-European school that brought together all the arts from painting to set design, to architecture, to design, to make a better world, you know, so the idea of improving society through design. So the conversation between so-called fine art and design has been fertile for many decades, and Duchamp appropriated some everyday objects to make his art, and therefore spoke to the designers, and the designers spoke to him.
Do you think we're going to see an online exhibit from you someday, from MoMA? We don't have to go to MoMA, we can just play the...
Well, it's already happening right now. I'm very proud of this project. It's about design and violence. It's a way to look at the manifestations of violence in contemporary society, looking at ambiguous objects ranging from the 3D printed gun to the AK-47, the Kalashnikov, so many. Mm-hmm.
One last question. Do you lust for one acquisition that you haven't gotten yet?
Definitely. The 747.
The whole plane? You want to bring plane?
No, I don't want to bring the plane. That's the beauty of it. You know, so we've talked about impossible acquisitions. So the 747 would not fit, but it can keep on flying and we can acquire it at a distance. So there would be some 747s that are MoMA ones. So when you get on those flights, you get a special boarding pass and then it continues. I have the whole plan already.
All right. Well, we'll stay in touch. Thank you very much for taking time
Thank
to
you,
be with
Ira.
Today. MoMA's senior design curator, Paola Antonelli. She's been acquiring a lot of cool stuff. Maybe we'll see a 747 there in the near future. We'll look forward to it. And if you'd like to see Paola and me face off in Street Fighter, yeah, she licked me bad on that. We've got a video of that, plus Paola's full tour of MoMA's video game arcade at our website. That's at sciencefriday.com. Yeah, you should watch that. It's very interesting.